Across the Aisle returns with part two of Anthony and Ben's conclusion of their wrap-up of Summer 22's film season. Here are your hosts, Anthony Francis and Ben Callimer.
We
have to diverge just a little bit.
Hold on, let's talk about Nope some more.
You're in luck. You are in luck.
No, I'm not.
The animated film from Skydance Animation, Luck, which is on Apple TV currently, is our next film. And I know you didn't like this movie.
I did not. Are we seeing a pattern here on this show? This has not been Anthony's favorite summer at the movies. No, I don't like Luck, sir, and I'm sorry I don't. I'm sorry when I don't like any film, number one. I don't like... A lot of people think critics have fun trashing a film. It's not fun to write a bad review.
No.
If we write a bad review, that means we have seen a bad movie and we have lost that time in our life when we could have been seeing a good film. So it gives us no pleasure to write a bad review. It gives me even less pleasure to write a bad review of a kid's film.
And I feel bad that I cajoled you into watching it, but I don't think you feel badly that you ended up watching it.
No, I would have done it anyway. I missed the screening. I would have done it eventually. I didn't like it. I don't hate it. I think it's let me get my grievances out because they're quick and easy. I think it's undercooked. I think the whole premise of the main girl having bad luck, that she has to go to the land of luck to get her good luck and blah, blah, blah.
Sam is the character's name.
Okay, whatever. that girl. But the movie didn't set it up properly, I don't think. She was more of a klutz. I said that in my review as well. She was just kind of stumbling around. Oops. Whoa, I knocked this over. I knocked that over. I almost got run over. Well, that's not bad luck. That's a klutz. So I thought the whole premise was fumbled at the very beginning. I thought, and this is where, ladies and gentlemen, Ben is going to come at me with vitriol. when it's his turn for this next statement. I thought the animation was poor. I thought it was tantamount to a cheap video game. It had none of the style or class of most modern, even the bad animated films today that aren't Pixar or DreamWorks or blah, have good animation. I thought it was a second-rate animation. I thought visually it was just completely flat, which shocked me as it's John Lasseter returning to the world of animation. I thought they wasted the talents of Whoopi Goldberg and Jane Fonda. Simon Pegg was, I laughed a few times, smiled a few times in his Scottish accent, kind of pissy, eventually becomes kind. I saw that better. It was called Shrek. Mike Myers did a much better job doing the exact same thing. Almost 20 years ago now, he had stronger scripts to work with. I thought the whole film was workmanlike. It wants to speak to the younger viewers. I thought it was too convoluted for that. I think it runs on too long for its uber thin plot. For me, not much worked in it. I didn't find any magic in it that all films of that type try to find. I just thought it didn't have enough imagination. It's a negative review for me.
Ah, okay. So 97.
Let me have it, buddy.
Not 97 minutes is too long for an animated film about an orphan trying to find her way in the world, eh?
I didn't say it was too long. I said it was too long I said it was too long, but I said it was too long for the Come on, buddy. Let's duke it out. I said it was too long for the script they had. There's not enough meat in that script to keep it going. That could have been a short. That could have been a 20-minute short.
I agree with you. It is a little thin on plot, but where it lacks on plot, it makes up in characters. I think all of us at some point are wayward individuals trying to find our way in the world.
Of course, again,
you and I had the benefit of having parents guiding us. Sam, voiced by Eva Noblezada, didn't have anybody. And, you know, her character felt that way in the world. And when Simon Pegg's black cat, Bob, drops literally into her lap, it was endearing on both characters because they need each other more than they realize. And, you know, the characters symbolize the yin and the yang of good luck and bad luck. And
of course they do.
I think the animation plays that out. You know, it's funny to reflect on the story. You mentioned John Lasseter, this film, you mentioned John Lasseter. Mm-hmm. The film originally started at Paramount. And Hollywood being Hollywood, Paramount walked away from it. Apple picked it up because Skydance has an agreement with Paramount. And, you know, the film found its way. Skydance worked with an animation company out of Spain. You are correct that the animation is very workmanlike.
It's flat. I say.
But I didn't mind that because there was a vibrancy in the worlds that they created. You know, the bad luck side of this equation falls a little bit flat in comparison to the good luck side of the world. But, you know, there are other actors in the film who bear mentioning. Colin O'Donoghue's Jerry as a leprechaun was humorous. John Ratzenberger of Cheers fame as Ruby is, I thought, you mentioned Jane Fonda and Whoopi Goldberg. They were flat characters, but Ruby balances them out. You know, I could go on about some of the characters, but I appreciated that in social media's push for minority voices to be better represented on the screen. I thought that this was a showcase in terms of that effort. What's interesting is that Ms. Noblezada actually has two films in theater, in circulation right now. She also has a smaller role in Joe Coy's Easter Sunday, which I know we're not reviewing. But I think that she's got the chops to pursue bigger roles. And both films showcase her talents in very different ways. And it's just going to create a nice body of work for her on which she can build. I am probably not as enthusiastic about the movie as I was when I first saw it, but I thought it was a good enough movie that I'm recommending.
And I don't hate it. It's just, I keep going back to the word flat. That's where I am. It's just, I watched it. I kept thinking you should really do, oh, no, we're moving on. Okay. You know, and it was over. You mentioned the worlds, the world building, the world crafting. I mean, they didn't do anything with them. They barely walked through them.
Yeah.
And I
think they more floated through them, but I understand your point.
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't do anything. I don't, this isn't, you know, I'm not going to let loose like I did on a couple others on this particular show. It was, you know, a negative review, but I'm not saying, my God, don't go anywhere near this thing. You know, if you have kids, take them. They might enjoy it. I don't know.
Well, fortunately, they don't have to go very far. Sit down in front of your TV and fire up Apple TV, and just it goes by quickly. I think that's its merciful grace. I think we're mixed on luck.
We are mixed. Mixed review on luck.
What we are certainly not mixed about, though, is our next film.
I'm about to get giddy again, folks.
Ron Howard's 13 Lives, now streaming on Prime Video.
And playing in very select theaters.
Yeah. The MGM and Amazon were gracious enough to give the film a week-long Oscar-qualifying run. All I can say about this film, and I have many things to say about it, but all I can strongly say is if you can see this in theaters, do so.
I second that emotion, sir.
The film is based on the 2018 rescue of 13 kids and their coach from a flooded cave in Thailand. Viggo Mortensen stars, Colin Farrell and Joel Edgerton co-star, and Ron Howard starts the film out with a purpose, and he spends the next, 2.5 hours?
At least, yeah.
Building and maintaining the tension of the rescue efforts, and my God, this is an amazing film.
I couldn't stand it. No. I just wanted to give the people what they wanted. This is the other one. I think we're in almost complete agreement with. I tell you, Howard is hit and miss for me as a filmmaker. But when he hits, he's usually really entertaining and creative, and this is just some of the best work he's ever done. It's number one, the story itself is, and how they got those kids out of there is absolutely incredible.
Yes.
I mean, it is incredible. If you told me that was your idea for a screenplay, I'd say sounds good, but getting them out the way they did, rewrite that, nobody's going to believe that. Right. And it's all true. And I fact check a lot of stuff on this one because I was moved so many times, and everything down to the little things, and we won't go into too much, everything that happened is true. I mean, you know, you play with characters' dramatic arcs a little bit to make it interesting to the viewers. You have to do that. I'm talking every single solitary thing, big and small, every person that they interacted with regarding to the rescue, that all happened. And I tell you, it's the screenplay by William Nicholson, is who I think is a good screenwriter when he buckles down. Mm-hmm. That's the crux of the whole thing, of course.
Yeah.
Or is it the way Howard shoots that wonderful screenplay? He does not, one of the smartest things the film does, one of the smartest things the film does is how in the wrong hands, this film, we would have spent the first half hour making each and every one of those kids, I think I already said this to you before, making them all angels.
Right.
We got to watch, oh, this one goes to church. This one cares for his invalid brother. This one does it. And every one of them are perfect children. And, you know, there's nothing wrong there. We don't get to know them because we don't need to know them.
Right.
We see them at a match or a practice or whatever it was. And then they go falutin around the city there and giggling, talking. What is that? Not even 10 full minutes.
Right.
And then they're trapped in a cave. These are kids in a cave. Get them out. We don't need any backstory on the kids.
The film allows for some of their backstory to seep through in the expression of fear.
That's where I was going. All the backstory you need is on the faces of their families and those in concern. Yeah. That's all you need.
Well, And the other thing that the film does so remarkably well is that each of Farrell, Mortensen, and Edgerton act and emote with their eyes more than their spoken word.
Oh yeah, they each one of them give great performances.
Yeah,
and nobody has the spotlight.
Nope.
No one actor has the big moment. The whole film is every actor in its big and small big moment. I really believe that. I am not going to publicly just mangle the names of two of these actors, but the actor who plays Commander, help me, the commander of the Thai army.
Yes.
I love him. I've seen him in other things. I loved the way what could have been cliche. I mean, I don't want these Americans in or whatever, white people in here helping us. We're the army. We've got this. And then, of course, and this is not a spoiler or anything, we learn that everybody eventually accepted help from everywhere.
Yes.
And the arc of his character on that is very interesting. And that actor is wonderful. And the other actor who, again, I won't try it. The governor.
Yeah.
I've seen him in many, many things. And this is his first, quote unquote, English speaking role. He only speaks English to the men. He's wonderful. He's just, this guy is he's trapped. He can't come out and say, well, folks, we don't know. You know, and there's that wonderful scene where when they've decided to do the rescue the way they're doing it, he comes out and that crowd of family and onlookers are out. He has to make this public speech and we're confident that there will be home soon. And when he turns around, like
you can see it on his face.
Yeah. His head just goes down and, but all through the film, as the days go on, they were in there, what, 10 days?
18 days.
Oh, wow. Okay. As the days go on, you can see his progression to, yes, I'm happy that everybody's helping. Oh my God, as the days go on, I don't think this is going to work, but I can't tell the people that, so I got to get that. It's a fantastic performance. Everyone in this movie is great. Everyone.
The Thai cast really impressed me.
They're wonderful. The mother of the, I don't know which one it was, the young mother?
Yes.
Yeah. All of them. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. All of them. They're all wonderful.
The Thai crew impressed me even more.
Yes, indeed.
This was an exceptionally shot film. You know, to shoot in an enclosed space.
Oh my god.
With so many sharp corners, the raging waters, you know, just the environment in general is difficult enough. And, you know, this has to be, for me, outside of Nope, probably one of the most exciting films. I was on the edge of my reclined seat for the entire length of the movie.
Ben, I couldn't move through this entire film. I couldn't move. And I tell you, I was probably unconsciously controlling my breathing like I would if I was down there with them. Because I remember it, because you're in it. I'm just in it. I don't know what's around me. Nothing but the film. And, you know, they're telling everybody, conserve your breath. Don't panic. Yep. And I think I'm probably going, okay, Vigo, I got it. Now let's go on to the next scene. I got it. No, it's the camera work is phenomenal. Yeah. The sets were built in Australia, the cave.
Yep.
Everything else is in Thailand, but the sets are in Australia. And I tell you, he's right there. Yeah. I mean, it may be a set, but they're still in that cramped tunnel.
Right.
And we know, if we thought about it, they can just go to the left where all the cameramen are. They'll be safe.
Yeah.
We know the kids, I mean, from the news at the time, we know that all the kids made it.
Right.
We know these things. And it's like, a weird reference, but you'll get what I mean in a minute. Alan Pakula's great All the President's Men.
Yep.
We know the outcome of that. And right. that is one of the most taut and suspenseful thrillers I've ever seen. And every time I watch it, and that says something to Howard's craft here.
Yeah. The journey that Howard takes us on is so immersive. You can't take your eyes off the screen. You cringe. Yes, you're controlling your breathing. It's a remarkable and phenomenal film. It's on Prime Video now here in the States. Highly, highly recommend it.
Highly recommend it. Please, if it is playing at the theater in your town, that is the way to see it. Get popcorn. You're going to need something to hold on to. It's riveting. It's harrowing. Howard should receive, along with his crew, should receive Oscar nominations. It's authentic. Very quickly in an interview, Howard said that he used a whole Thai crew with artists and philosophers because he wanted to get the feeling of Thailand correct and not seem like his camera was a foreigner trying to do a movie in Thailand. Yeah. And I think he got it down to the scene with that monk. Remember the Burmese monk moment?
Yes, yes.
That is just perfect. And he said he worked hard at the proper way to pray, to look, to not look, to bow. And it comes off because that's a striking moment that might not have worked in the wrong hands. I think it's a gripping, thrilling film. I think it's about the best people finding the best in themselves, finding the best in all of us.
Yes.
Very, very sadly, it's a story that was all over the news. And then they got the kids out and the news was done with it. I'm glad that they made a film about it. There's a equally as brilliant documentary about it. Forgive me, I don't remember the name, from last year. It's just great filmmaking. It's I know it's a dramatic rescue, but it's also thrilling entertainment done at the highest level. Kudos to Ron Howard. Two high recommendations for the both of us.
You know, I think something that we also agree on that's also on streaming is Dan Trachtenberg's Prey.
Ah, yes, Prey. your co-host forgot about that. I think we pretty much fully agree on that one too.
Yeah.
It's excellent. I was surprised because, I mean, you get past a second sequel and I'm just terrified every time I go,
well,
I'm thinking, I don't have faith. I had no faith. I had zero faith.
For audience reference, Prey is a prequel to the 1987 John McTiernan thriller Predator. And it's what, four sequels. And now we've got a fifth film, which serves as a prequel to Predator. And,
well, to be fair, this is the fourth sequel.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
We don't count the Alien versus Predator films. We don't talk about that here, Ben. Use that kind of language on this here radio.
Right, right. Now, Amber Midthunter, who plays Naru, is such a wonderful actress and character. She really carries the film.
Great presence.
There's a lot of determination in the film. The Predator looks good.
I don't know why they have to keep adjusting his look, but yeah, he looks good.
Well,
he looks great, but why just stick? We know what he's supposed to look like. Give us that.
I think what they're trying to establish amongst other Easter eggs in the film is that the character of the Predator evolves as time goes on.
Yeah.
But it also draws fan interest in the franchise. We can speak about the film. I think, if I'm not mistaken, we're both recommending it.
Highly
recommending it.
Yeah. And I also recommend, even though I would never in my life and probably never will again, recommend watching a dubbed version of any film. And I don't know. That's my one complaint with the film. They don't let the Cherokee speak the native Cherokee language, but they let them redub it back into Cherokee. I watched it that way a second time. It's better. And there's so, I mean, there's dialogue, but there's so little dialogue that the dubbing isn't distracting.
It's a very visual film. I have not gone back to watch it dubbed. You are one of many people who have commented on it, and I will make it an effort.
I mean, see either version, but that's the way to see it, I recommend. Yeah.
I know why now. I think my biggest complaint isn't about the movie itself. It's about how it's it's been distributed. I think it's a real missed opportunity, especially as we get into, we've had two, you and I would disagree here, but we've had two very packed months in the summer season of movies. And August has become very dry of prominent tentpole films. Yes, there are going to be a few smaller independent films. We shouldn't take away from them. But August is devoid of tentpole films.
Well, I mean, it's always been that way.
Well,
August has always been the February of summer.
Yes, but the strength of the films released in June and July are not going to carry over into August. And so there's concern that the box office is going to be dry for the next month. And that's a real concern because Hollywood has never, quote unquote, run out of supply, especially when the demand is there.
Right. No, I agree. I also think, especially for the visual tones the director set for Prey, give it a theatrical, buddy. You know, if you have to, do the same day thing, but just get it on screens. People will come. I know The Last Predator didn't do well. In my opinion, it's because, exactly. It was not a good movie and fans were disappointed. Word of mouth after the opening weekend was immediately bad.
Yeah.
And this is a whole new idea. I tell you, films about Native Americans, we should have one a week. There are so many thousands of stories to tell there.
Yes.
Honest, real stories. We can't have one every decade. That's another show.
Yes.
And I tell you, you had me at, it's set in 1719 and he fights Cherokee Nation. Okay.
Right.
I don't need to know. I don't care who directed. I don't care. I'm like the Predator versus the Cherokee Nation.
Yes.
Hello, one seat C-17. I'm already there.
Popcorn for one. And
popcorn's already salted. And
yep.
Ice, Dr. Pepper. And here I am. Oh, it's not released yet. I'll wait. I'll be right here when it starts. Yeah, no. It's a great idea, phenomenal idea. Trachtenberg is his name, right? Who did
Yes.
He directed a really good Cloverfield sequel. I thought Cloverfield Lane was rather well done and creative. Maybe, hey, you need a sequel to your movie? Call Trachtenberg. That's two for two. It's two for two.
Please don't encourage J.J. Abrams.
That's another show. It's okay. We can let JJ have some stuff, but I will say JJ doesn't have to have everything.
Right. Right. you know who I think has everything though?
Wait, real quick. I can tell we're segueing out of this.
Yes.
It's exciting. It's fun. It's beautifully shot. We both recommend Prey.
Yes. Now back to my question. You know who I think has everything?
I have a feeling I'm going to disagree with you on this.
I know you will. But Bullet Train has everything. And,
I don't disagree. It has everything. Boy, and does it.
And I was going to say, you can take it or leave it.
And it is everything everywhere all at once, let me tell you. And it keeps going and going. Anyway, go on. Continue, sir.
It's like the goddamn Energizer Bunny.
Oh, my God. Even that thing keeled over eventually, I'm sure. Oh, stop the train. I want to get off. I'm just doing cliches tonight. That's all I'm doing.
I'm actually recommending Bullet Train. I, you know, there have been some criticisms leveled at it that it falls off its rails in the second half.
What? Go ahead. I'm sorry. What? No, who said that?
No, actually, it's based on a Japanese book, Ladybug. I think it's a very philosophical film. Is it too Americanized? Yes. I thought Brad Pitt was reclaimed his rusty role from Ocean's 11. I thought he was charismatic. What helped him, though, was Aaron Taylor Johnson's Tangerine and Brian Tyree Henry, who has been impressing me lately. He plays Lemon.
Wonderful actors, both.
Yes, yes. They really are the highlight of the film. I think Hiroyuki Sanada's The Elder is another highlight of the film.
One of the screen's great actors, but American audiences can't figure it out because of most of the choices he makes over here.
Well,
this is true, though. I fully believe he's one of the best actors of the last 20 years.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
So actually, you have to see Japanese or British films to find that out.
I do think his scene with Brad Pitt towards the end of
That's a good scene. Sitting across from the aisle from one another.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, that's a wonderful scene. And very quickly, Hiroyuki Sanada, one of his finest performances, is in a beautiful James Ivory film called City of Your Final Destination that next to no one but critics saw. Anthony Hopkins, Laura Linney, so on. Hiroyuki Sanada plays Anthony Hopkins' longtime lover. And it's a beautiful performance. It's a great film. I highly recommend it. Continue on, sir.
I'll have to give that a watch.
Fantastic film.
David Leitch, I hope I'm not butchering his last name, who directed Deadpool 2, which I was not a fan of.
I'm a big fan of that because I was not a fan of Deadpool, which is weird, which is strange. There was something about part two that got me. I don't know what it was.
I think I need to see it again.
If you don't like it, you don't like it.
Well, I think it might have been the circumstances under which I saw it because I was a huge fan of Deadpool. But I think he lent a certain charisma. There I go using that word again. He lent a certain charisma and aura to this film. I don't know that it was meant to be as big and as boisterous as what the final product that we got. But I for one, sat down in my theater seat. I saw it on IMAX. Again, a good way to see the film. I just let myself be immersed in it and enjoyed it.
I did too. About an hour. I was doing just fine. No, my strange thing is, do I recommend this? Yes. That might shock you. I think Ben just fell over. I do recommend this, yet my review was ultimately negative. So it's a marginal recommendation. I recommend it for everything Ben said. He's completely correct. It is, for me, for about an hour, it is very entertaining, quick, funny. Aaron Taylor Johnson and Brian Tyree Henry are just walk away with this movie in every second they're in, whether they're together or apart on screen. It's their film. Tangerine and what? Lemon?
Yes.
Yeah. I think that the other assassin characters, and there are a lot of them on this train, were just kind of throwaway. One of my favorite current actresses is Zazie Beetz, and I know this is where Ben and I really disagree.
Yes.
Her scene, I won't go into anything, but she has a scene with, I don't think it's a spoiler. She's an assassin and she has a scene where she has to fight. So surprise. But I won't go into anything else about it or who she is or whatever. But I think it's just such a badly written, badly directed moment. It's the worst of all the fights in the whole movie to me. And Ben, I remember you saying it was a great moment.
Yeah, it was. It was. The other thing that you just recalled in my memory was that, and I guess I forgot it. Frustration mounts at Essentially Cinema.
That's okay. That means we're human and real. And
you know what? You know what's human and real though?
What's that?
Our final movie on this roundup.
Wait a minute. How do we jump off the bullet train?
Well, I think we've said all we can about bullet
train. I just said I didn't like the assassins. No, I recommend it, but I would say about an hour and 15, get off the train because it just keeps going and going. And it, to me, it just became a big headache. Bad music choices drowned out the cool. Yeah. Fight scenes. It's a marginal recommendation for me.
You just reminded me of why I highly recommend the movie. And I hadn't watched the trailer before seeing the movie. And I had a nice pleasant surprise in one character who I won't mention, but I guess this character was given away in the film.
They ruined it. I won't say either, but it's a big, you can tell by the way he sets it up, by the way he lays it out, and by the appearance at the finale, it was supposed to be a surprise.
Yeah.
And it's in the trailer.
Yeah.
It's a big, why would you, surely the studio did that. There's no way the director would have let that happen.
Well, that's kind of like the trailer for Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, showing the Enterprise blowing up. When they went, they made all deliberate attempts to not let that leak.
And then if John dies at the end, they spoil. No, I'm just kidding. He dies at the end. I'm like, yeah, you told me.
No,
folks, you get comedy too. I'm not saying it's always funny and it's mostly hackneyed, but hey, here we are.
But I think we have a future episode idea.
I think so too. I think you're right. So marginal recommendation for me, solid recommendation for you for Bullet Train.
Yep.
We have one more, right?
Yes. Our most human film.
Which is, hey, no one is more shocked than I am at the truth in that statement.
My jaw is still glued to the floor from your reaction.
Yours.
Of the movie that has now surpassed Titanic in its box office take here domestically.
Hold on, before you continue, this part of the episode is called Anthony Eats Crow. Brought to you by Essentially Cinema.
But why are you eating crow on Top Gun Maverick?
On Top Gun Maverick, I'm eating crow because I won't get into it. I've never liked Top Gun. As I get older, I think I realize I almost hate the original Top Gun. If you want my reasons, read my thing on Facebook. I threw something up. I'm not going to waste time here. Here's the thing real quick. And I don't mean this as an insult to anybody. Every single thing that everyone loves about the original Top Gun is most likely 98% of that is what I hate.
That's fair. Would you agree that there's a certain level of nostalgia associated with the film that you latched onto?
No, I will not agree. I will agree 50%.
Okay.
Because I have no nostalgia for Top Gun. The only nostalgia I have for, I know I'm getting there.
Yeah.
The only nostalgia I have for Top Gun is the people I went to see it with. Because it came out when I was in high school friends, buddies, girlfriends. I went four times. I tried, everybody. Okay. people kept dragging me. Oh, come on. You're the movie guy. You got to give it another shot. I'm like, this is the third time. I can't do it again. So anyway,
let me qualify my statement here before you continue. Not nostalgia for Tony Scott's classic, which critics at the time didn't.
The Hunger?
I'm sorry.
You said Tony Scott's classic. I said The Hunger.
No, the classic
Revenge.
Film.
Oh, the classic one, Revenge.
Yeah.
True Romance. True Romance, Man on Fire. And you know what? I'm out.
in all seriousness, though, would you agree that films today that look back on origin stories from the past, namely Top Gun, but origin stories in general that reflect on their films from the past fondly? Actually, no. Let me reframe my question here.
I was going to say, I don't think that's what you're asking, but I know what you're asking, but go ahead.
When I refer to nostalgia, it's not being nostalgic over the film that came prior to it, but nostalgia for a certain style of film that's not necessarily told today.
Oh, you're 100% correct there. As people will hear me on almost every episode of this show gripe about,
Grumpy Pants.
In my day, we had better movies. The big Hollywood entertainment action films are what I'm speaking of.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they were all good back in the 80s. There was a lot of crap. I'm talking to you, Cobra fans, and there's a lot of you. I see the chatter on Facebook, and it drives me crazy.
Anyway. We are a small but vocal minority.
Oh, you too? Oh, what the hell? We gotta do a salon show to get to the bottom, get to the bottom of this problem. Anyway. I'll blow this whole place up. Go ahead. I don't shop here. Oh, my God. Anyway, Cobra's disease is the disease, and this movie's the cure. That was the tagline. Don't think I don't know it. You're welcome, everybody. This could be the most fun our audience has had on our show yet. Anyway, big budget Hollywood action entertainment. The 80s did it. They knew how to do it. They started it. I mean, in that style. And there were ones that didn't work, but there were mostly, like, the 80s for me is the action decade.
Yeah.
They even straggled a little bit into the early 90s, but the 80s from 1980, let's start with Raiders of the Lost Ark, if you will. And that's not even the type I'm talking about, but 81 through 92. That 11 years has just produced some of the all-time great action films. I won't even begin to list them, but it's a lost art on how to do it. And they wouldn't always have well-designed characters. They wouldn't always, have fun action scenes that could contain themselves throughout a 90 to 100 minute movie, but most of them did. And most of them were, we care about John McClane, not because he's a cool dude with a gun. They wrote a character. We care about Martin Riggs and his past. We care about Danny Glover's character, Murtaugh. These are well-crafted characters, well-cast, and and then they give us creative action sequences.
Yeah,
they spend their money wisely. Again, not every one of them, but I will go on record as saying 90% of 80s action films were either good or great. Yes. And they knew how to do it. The studios, hey, take this money. As long as you blow a bunch of shit up here, how much is your lead actor? What was his last one? Here, take it. Yep. That's gone.
Yeah.
But it trickled down very slowly, because through the 90s, we still got a few There was a Speed here.
Yeah.
There the was Rock. This will make you happy. There was an Air Force One there. Yep. There was a.
We have to go on that, don't we?
We do. There was a Rock there. Yep. And that's my only thumbs up positive Michael review Bay. Of a Michael Bay movie. And then in the 2000s, there was, I can't even think of any off the top of my head. And now it's just gone. They don't know. Listen to what we both said about Jurassic Park Dominion.
Yeah.
They don't know how to do it anymore. The right. budget's there. We can see it. They don't know how to play with the toys in a structured way yeah. anymore. It's all
you know who knows how to play with the toys in a structured way?
Tom Cruise.
Yes, the film's producer and star.
Let me tell you about that guy. He is the movie star of his time.
Well, he's also the producer.
No, I agree. I mean, yeah. you could argue Bruckheimer over him, but no, sure. Tom Cruise. Bruckheimer jumps in to the deep end and then steps back. Tom right. Cruise jumps into the deep end and digs deeper.
Yes, yeah.
So, yeah, but no, but I mean... Of course, producer, but I mean, a lot of people, Tom Cruise, blah. I don't care what they do on their off time. Tom Cruise is the, in my opinion, star of his generation. There's nobody yes. like Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Nobody can. He makes near consistently great films.
Yes.
He really does.
100%. But I think the success of Top Gun Maverick, and I think our mutual highly recommend rating on the film is that the level of craft and care
oh, I tell
behind
you,
this film.
Ben, I almost cried, and not at the scene I was supposed to cry at. I almost cried about a half an hour in. I'm like, you yeah. can make out what's going on in the air. I can yeah. I can follow this. I'm riveted. Yeah. The reason we called this Eating Crow, folks, is because when I first saw the trailer for Top Gun Maverick, I looked over at my family and I said, no, no, never, never. I might stop on it. I was saying this up to its release, Ben, if you remember.
Yes.
I was saying I might, when it hits HBO, I might stop on it for a few minutes. Other than that, I don't care. I'm never going to watch the whole thing, which is a horrible outlook for a critic, but hey, and I Eating Crow part here, I fell in absolute love with it. It's going to probably, unless we just have one hell of a fall and winter, it's going to probably find its way into my top 15 of the year.
Yeah,
I really do. It is one of the best Hollywood entertainments I have seen in the past two decades. I'm not kidding.
I think key to its success is in its director, Joseph Kosinski.
Kosinski did a wonderful job.
Yeah. you know, you think about Tron Legacy, I think one of his earliest films. And I think
it's his first one, if I'm double check that after my Keith David comment earlier. I spoke without thinking then, folks. No, Tron Legacy is a fantastic film.
Yeah. It is. It really is. And, you know, it speaks to Kosinski's care of what's come before. I know you don't like Top Gun, but he really made an effort to honor the original film, certainly with the characters who have crossed over into this new film, namely Val Kilmer. I think both actors have a wonderful rapport on this film.
It was wonderful seeing them. And I hated both of their characters the last time I saw them together. And when they had their scene together, I was like, oh, this is great. Look at them. They're back together again.
Yeah, exactly.
I tell you, no one's more shocked than me.
The new cast, Miles Teller, does a great job. Jennifer Connelly, I think when we spoke off mic, you were very, you regarded her character and her performance highly.
She did well with the normal role that
Yeah.
And the lesser hands would have been flat, basically. She did very well. She was alluring and pleasant, and yeah, I liked her. She's bored me a lot over the years, and I don't know why it took Top Gun Maverick to bring her back to me, but she did a good job.
You are going to end up just the same as Kristen Stewart in her Stewart performance. You're going to go back to Jennifer Connelly's prior films and probably have a different appreciation of what she brings to her roles.
No, but
no, darn it, I thought I could get him.
Nah, you didn't. Yeah, I dodged that bullet. No, but I see what you're saying. But I always had a respect for Connelly. It's just sure. There was some, it was right around the time she won her Oscar for Beautiful Mind that she just she was just kind of bland in all of her roles and didn't really, maybe it was the role she was choosing. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I've certainly liked her before.
Yeah.
So.
John Hamm, Glenn Powell, Lewis Pullman, and Ed Harris co-star. Each of these actors have a variety of roles. They're duplicative of the roles that we saw in the original film.
Oh, they're, well, that's a nice way to say it. They're all carbon copies of every, but it doesn't matter this time.
No, no.
It is so well handled.
Yeah.
And so well written. I was with it. There's, I won't get into what it is. There's still many people who probably haven't seen it. There's Star Wars references in this thing.
Yeah. Yep.
That when I first saw it happening, I'm like, all right, we've gone too far here. And then they do it. Oh, it totally works because I'm with you. And then this isn't a spoiler. There's an aerial battle or two.
Yes.
In Top Gun Maverick. And I tell you, each one is filmed with supreme care, supreme style, respect. And I'm talking screenplay to aerial footage to everything. Respect to the original, whatever I think of it. Respect to the audience of today and yesteryear.
Yep.
I love the aerial footage. I mean, there's some early films that really have amazing aerial footage. Wings, Hell's Angels that Howard Hughes shot. Both from the 20s and 30s, by the way. And they have amazing aerial footage because it's real.
Yeah.
And this is right up there with them. If not some of the best I've ever seen, it's real for the most part.
They're
up there.
Yeah. This is the second film on our list where IMAX cameras were used to great advantage.
Oh, man. That's the way to see it, I tell you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's just, I think I was shocked when I came out of my screening because initially there were some things that rubbed me the wrong way about the movie, but the more I thought about it, the more appropriate I thought they were. And
Exactly. Yeah. If I can jump on that real quick.
Yeah.
I mean, and the first text I sent you when I came out of it, I wanted to scare you. But that wasn't a lie.
Right.
This thing, from the minute it comes on to the minute it's over, cliche after cliche after cliche. Each scene is just a mirror image of a previous scene in the original Top Gun. Each character is a mirror image of a previous. I mean, Ed Harris is James Tolkien, for God's sake. They're even both bald, and they both say almost the exact same line about making him do something at Top Gun.
Right.
And John Hamm is Tom Skerritt. It's the same movie-ish, with the exception of a couple of new things that I won't get into.
Right.
And it shouldn't work at all. And it does. And it works so beautifully. I haven't been this entertained at a movie that was made for pure entertainment.
And it's a blockbuster.
In years. Yeah, in a Hollywood blockbuster, usually I'm walking by, you know, or I'm coming out. I said that wrong. I'm coming out of them. Yay! as our fans have heard tonight. But
yeah,
I tell you, my wife was shocked. My friends are shocked. My dad was shocked. You're shocked. Anybody who knows what I think of Top Gun is shocked. No one is more shocked than myself. I really
think my head yes here.
It's okay. No, it's a I love it. It's a great film. It's the that and Nope are the great entertainments of 2022 as far as pure entertainment.
Yep.
To turn your mind down and just have fun. The two best entertainments of the year. One of the best movies Cruise has done that's not called Mission Impossible in decades.
Right.
I absolutely love Top Gun Maverick. And I might say, this crow tastes pretty delicious.
Well, given the amount of cajoling I needed to give you in order to get you out to actually see it.
I tell you.
It's sweet victory.
Dude, bask in your victory. I'm talking, your victory is so big, you are drinking from the skull of me. I don't know how well you know history, but Vikings and some warrior tribes used to cut the heads off, empty the skull, wash it, and drink at the celebration from the skull of their enemies. And yeah, dude, you drank from my skull tonight. Top Gun Maverick is here. I am live. I can't take it back. It's going to go everywhere tomorrow or this weekend. Top Gun Maverick is one of the best films of 2022.
We're both agreed with a highly recommended review. Bullet Train, we are mixed. Prey, we are highly recommending. 13 Lives, we are highly recommending. Luck, we are mixed on. Nope, we agree that we're highly recommending the film. The Black Phone, we are mixed. Elvis, we are definitely mixed.
Mixed, is that what you want to call it?
Yeah. Jurassic World Dominion, we are decidedly not recommending. And Crimes of the Future, we are recommending. But I think
you're just a little stronger than I, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So the big winners of this show, Top Gun Maverick and Nope.
And 13 lives.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. I can't say enough good about all three of those we just mentioned.
I think June and July were very strong months as far as movies, considering that we are still in the throes of the pandemic. I know that there are quote unquote supply chain issues with Hollywood trying to get movies completed and outdoor.
Yeah.
We've got the Warner Brothers debacle, which we won't get into.
No.
But I don't think we can leave this roundup without acknowledging the passings of Anne Heche.
Some recent passings.
Yeah, Anne Heche and Nichelle Nichols. You know, the two bigger names. Uhura. Made a big impact on my life. I know Miss Nichols was a huge champion for NASA and got the program to where it is today.
She did. She brought the first people of color to NASA.
Yep.
She brought the first women to NASA.
Yep.
She became a part of the program. It's just an amazing, amazing career and life this woman had. And
I don't think I'd be wrong in saying Nichelle Nichols was the right stuff.
Ah, very good. She was indeed the right stuff. And of course, so many other accomplishments, but she will forever be Uhura to millions and millions of people.
Absolutely.
And someone to look up to for anyone.
I think Anne Heche is also somebody to admire. She consistently gave rock solid performances. I know you have a few that you've mentioned that are tops on your list.
Yeah. I mean, but, she was certainly a good actress who could be great. Yeah.
But I think she was a wonderful example to the LGBTQ community. She was very influential in her causes, and two bright lights have left us. And,
indeed. But I also don't want to forget Roger E. Moseley, who died just not even a week ago. Everyone knows him from Magnum P.I., but if you want to see how good of an actor he really was, I highly recommend people search out Lead Belly, where he played Lead Belly, famous blues musician. He's excellent in that role, and he was good in supporting roles and semi-tough with Burt Reynolds and Christopherson, and he was in a few blaxploitation movies, surprise, and he was very good in each one of them. And he stars in one of the most underseen and, in my opinion, underrated blaxploitation genre, Sweet Jesus Preacher Man. He's the lead. He's excellent. Roger E. Moseley. Another loss.
Yeah.
In a year full of, and hey, we can't forget Clue Gulager. Great Clue Gulager. I mean, his career is too long to start talking about now, but
right.
Point Blank, Last Picture Show, for horror fans, Return of the Living Dead. So many great, The Hidden, many great, great works. And he's worked with the best. And he made it a long time. And I knew him, didn't know him, but through Facebook. And a lot of loss in the last week.
Tough. We wish their families well.
And in their own way, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but in their own way, each one of the Moseley, Gulager, Nichols, and Hache, in their own way, they left their mark and are leaving in cinema and life for Nichols.
Yeah.
And are leaving whatever size hole you want to think it is for each of them.
I think they leave tremendous legacies, and we will have each of their legacies to admire for years. Yeah,
exactly. And before we sign off, I just want to steer people. It's hard to find for Anne Hache, my favorite. I think she was never better than she was in a movie called Wild Side, directed by Donald Cammell, co-starring Joan Chen and Christopher Walken. The studio took it away from him, cut it up, and Cammell killed himself over it.
Wow.
That's how tight he was to that film. She's wonderful. She was never better, Anne Hache. I would go as far as say she was brilliant. It's a very smart, a very erotic, very well done film. And if you can find the full cut, I only found it on VHS in the 90s. Please see the full cut. Don't see the studio cut. But a wonderful performance from Anne Hache.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. I think we have a new episode up in addition to this one, an interview you conducted, yes?
I did, yes. I spoke with filmmaker, actor, writer, and one of the original Banana Splits, Terrence H. Winkless. I spoke with him for Essentially Cinema. The review is up now. It's a long review. The interview is up now, excuse me. It's a long interview, and it flies by. There's not a boring moment. The stories this man tells are amazing. It's an in-depth. This guy is just a great guy, a forward thinker, really smart, really knows his filmmaking. And mind you, he co-wrote The Howling. He was in a lot of films. He was in a film with Nick Nolte, co-wrote The Howling. That really got him going. Directed a movie for Roger Corman in the 80s, did a lot of action films, a lot of television, and he's working on other projects now. We're going to have him back on. Maybe you can join me that time, Ben.
That'd be great.
But the interview's up, Terrence H. Winkless. It's a blast. please, everyone, give it a listen.
And be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Look for Essentially Cinema. Great roundup. Thank you very much.
Great show. And just to let you know, folks, we're going to start doing this at the end of every month. We're going to just do a wrap up because I think it's fun for us.
Yeah.
We write our reviews, we post them, we read each other's reviews. And over the phone, we, you know, do some bullet point comments. It's better for us and for our listeners to hear it in real time. We're reacting live to one another. Like, for instance, earlier, folks, when Ben was completely wrong about the black phone, I came back and said, no, but I think it's a great format and a great way for people to hear our more in-depth thoughts about films.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm Ben Callimer. You can see my reviews featured on the Movie Review and on the Cinema Files.
I'm Anthony Francis. You can see me at the Movie Review as well and at screencomment.com.
Across the Aisle will return in September with a slate of new movies. You can follow Essentially Cinema and The Movie Review on all the socials. Essentially Cinema and Across the Aisle are available on your favorite podcast streaming platform. Until next time, the aisle is being cleaned.